Welcome to Discoville, where we will be discussing Star Trek Discovery and the Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we will take an in-depth and closer look at the deeper messages and morals of these two different television series as they introduce us to new and exciting stories, characters, locations, and more. My name is Kevin. I'm your host. But I'd also like to introduce my fellow co-host of Blood of Kings, big Star Trek fan and now big Orville fan, Norman C. Lau. Welcome to the first episode of Discoville.
You know, it's funny that it is our first episode, but it feels like because we're such Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek in general, and the Orville fans that we've been having these discussions for, I don't know, how long, Kevin?
And we are calling it Discoville because we're combining Discovery and Orville, and it sounds like a fun name. And Norm, I have you to credit for that, so thank you.
Thank you very much. And it will be interesting if we can find relativity between these two shows. I'm not saying that that's the point of this podcast, but where there's value in one, there may be the same value in another, but we are going to look at these two shows in their own separate ways. But you never know how the storylines are going to line up, because these are, here's the interesting thing, and a friend of mine, Will Wynn, who used to be a co-host of mine on Trek FM on Warp 5, the Enterprise show, he said something that was very profound today, and I thought that was just, wow, I didn't realize how profound it was. He said on Sunday night, I'm watching a new episode of Star Trek on TV.
Yeah.
And for the past 12 years, we have never said that.
This is true. Yep. Well, I'm going to get into our mission statement here in just a moment, but we wanted to remind the people that are listening to us here on the Fandom Podcast Network, the first episode of Discoville. You can find all of the Fandom Podcast Network programming on fpnet.podbean.com, and FPNet is also on the Podbean app. Fandom Podcast Network's on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users. We're also on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network. Facebook, you can also find us at Fandom Podcast Network as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can email us at thefandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Also, Twitter there, Fandom Podcast Network. I think it's Fandom Podcast, Fan Pod Network. That's what it is. And also on Instagram, you can find us there as well. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norman, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
Now, we've been promoting that we have a new partnership here with TeePublic.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that we have a bunch of great, great t-shirts that you can get, different designs for all of our shows. And you know what? We may have to add a new logo up there soon, Norm.
We may. I have to make sure that that actually can clear licensing.
But you can find the Blood of Kings. You can find Couch Potato Theater, Time Warp, Culture Clash, and of course coming up soon is our Good Evening Podcast t-shirt with our partners over there doing the Alfred Hitchcock podcast.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, for some of our newer listeners here who are actually tuning into this, because this particular show is probably going to be and resonate a little bit more with Star Trek and Discovery fans, the TeePublic store hosts all of the logos for all of our shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. I guess Discoville is now part of the pantheon of all the different shows, because we have so many different shows on the Fandom Podcast Network and not just one.
That's right. Well, welcome to Discoville, covering Star Trek Discovery and Orville. Now, if I were to say that I would like to get something accomplished with this show, mm-hmm. let me first of all read the mission statement here, and then I'll get a little bit more into that.
Okay.
The Discoville podcast will bring you insightful and informative recap of the most recent episodes of Star Trek Discovery and the Orville. Not only do we have Star Trek back on TV with Star Trek Discovery, but we also have an ambitious Star Trek-inspired TV show helmed by Star Trek fan and Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane. Star Trek fans have embraced both Star Trek Discovery and Orville, and the Discoville podcast will help celebrate both. Now, I know there's a little bit of division out there. There's some people that say, I don't like the new Star Trek. Orville's my Star Trek. And mm-hmm. some people don't like Orville because maybe they don't like the humor. So there's a little bit of that. But I think in general, most people have embraced both of these shows. Now, if I can say that, you know, if there's a Star Trek fan out there that has not been turned around yet on Orville, and hoping that they listen to this podcast, and vice versa, if there's an Orville fan that does not like the new Star Trek, and I know several of them, I know some diehard Star Trek fans that are not into the new Star Trek Discovery, I'm hoping they can listen to this and maybe we can change and sway some opinions on this.
Well, I mean, the only thing that we can really do right now in terms of informing both communities, because they are, for all intents and purposes, two separate communities. Star Trek has its own divisions in that community. I think the Orville probably is a little bit easier of a sell because it's really only one community, and that's the Orville community, albeit it does trend a lot towards the 1980s and 1990s flavor of Star Trek, because let's face facts, it really does. That's where a lot of its success, I think, is coming from. It's hard to really feel where the outcome is going to be for these two shows within the community. But what I do, and I would like us to focus on here, Kevin, is to reinforce the positivity for new fans. There are a lot of fans that come with preconceived notions, preconceptions, baggage, if you will, of what one particular genre is supposed to be and supposed to be like. If it's not going to fit my mold, it's not going to be a success, period.
Right.
I think that we can't really sway fans like that. However, if you want to hear more in-depth discussion and you just want to hear more about what you feel is relevant, I think that our podcast will resonate with you.
I agree completely. And I think that for maybe some of our newer listeners, or maybe some that, you know, just, you know, have only been watching one or the other, I give a little brief synopsis here. Star Trek Discovery, we'll talk about that real quick, created by Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman for the CBS All Access, which is basically their paywall, mm-hmm. their type of Netflix there where you have to pay to watch it. Mm-hmm. The story of Star Trek Discovery begins roughly a decade before Captain Kirk's five-year mission, as portrayed in the original Star Trek from the 1960s, and a century before the events of Star Trek Enterprise. The series follows the crew of the USS Discovery as they encounter new worlds, civilizations, delving into familiar themes and expanding upon an incident that has been talked about within the franchise universe, but never fully explored. Assuming they're meeting some little Klingon war, maybe?
Okay, so maybe before we get into all that, is this going to be a spoiler-heavy show?
Well, yeah, because we're going to be talking about the episodes.
Right. So I just want to make that out, you know, put that out there. It's going to be a spoiler heavy show for sure.
Yes, this is a spoiler heavy. We're going to be talking about what we had seen because we know that people are going to be doing the same and they want to hear what we have to say and they might want to share their opinions with us.
Sure.
So this will be all spoilery. So, yes. Yep. The Orville, let's talk about that briefly.
Okay.
From Emmy Award winning executive producer and creator Seth MacFarlane, Family Guy, Ted, Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. The Orville is a live-action, one-hour space adventure series set 400 years in the future that follows the Orville, a mid-level exploratory spaceship. Its crew, both human and alien, face the wonders and dangers of outer space while also dealing with the familiar but humorous problems of everyday life. The ensemble series stars Seth MacFarlane as the ship's commanding officer, Adrian Palicki, agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Friday Night Lights, as his ex-wife, who's assigned as his first officer. Additional cast members include Penny Johnson, Gerald from 24, Larry Sanders Show, and of course, as we know, from Deep Space Nine.
Right.
Yep, Cassidy Yates. Scott Grimes from ER, Justified. Of course, you mentioned he was also, what character was he in?
He was Malarkey in Band of Brothers.
Malarkey, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, yes.
Funny, is that his character's name is Malloy and Malarkey. It's kind of like, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Peter Macon from Shameless and Bosch. Halston Sage from Majors, Neighbors and Goosebumps. Jay Lee from Family Guy, The Cleveland Show. Mark Jackson, That Royal Today. And Chad L. Coleman from The Walking Dead and The Wire.
Oh, and Norm MacDonald. Hey.
Oh, and Norm MacDonald. Yes. Thank you. The Orville is produced by 20th Century Fox Television. The series was created and written by Seth MacFarlane, Brandon Braga from Terra Nova and from Star Trek, David A. Goodman from Family Guy, Jason Clark from Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, and Ted, and Liz Heldens from Mercy and Deception serve as executive producers on the series. Jon Favreau, The Jungle Book, and Iron Man directed the pilot, on which he also served as an executive producer. Now, one of the things that really came out to me about this series is, of course, when we first saw the trailer, it was very kind of jokey. But as we start to kind of watch it, realize it's not just that. There's a lot of drama in there. And what I love about this show, and the one line here that says that its crew, both human and alien, face the wonders and dangers of outer space while also dealing with the familiar and often humorous problems of everyday life, which we got a tease of in Star Trek, probably more in Deep Space Nine in Next Gen, but we really do get everyday life stuff so far from what we've seen in the Orville. And this is one of the things that really, really draws me to this show. What about you, Norm?
Well, here's the interesting thing about the Orville, and maybe for, because we're still kind of like working out our first show format, Kevin, I think that it's important for us to stay within a certain show frame. So we're going to talk about the Orville first here and then migrate over to Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, we could switch it up, but yeah, let's do it that way.
Okay, so my feelings on the Orville are this. It's so well produced and it's so well themed in the classic late 1980s, 1990s Hotel Hilton style of Star Trek, The Next Generation, a la the Enterprise with its beige carpets and its 90s pattern kind of fabrics and textiles and the way that it's lit. It's so dead on accurate to that particular theme that you can't help but extrapolate. It is back in that particular era. And now you're watching kind of a Next Generation-y kind of show, but without the prim, proper, professional attitude of Starfleet.
Yes.
And I think that's what's so great about it is that it's so well done on one end from the costumes and the props and the production and the sets and the music is so gorgeous and the prosthetics and the makeup and the aliens. All that stuff is above board. That is top of the line stuff.
That's right.
But then, but then you have everyday, you know, everyday Joe speak.
Yeah. You eat everyday Joe speak. Yep. You got, people's quirks and hang-ups and habits,
right?
Whether it's drinking a soda, you know, on the bridge. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that we'll touch on it too, but the latest episode you saw them drinking coffee and then they have little cup holders by their chairs, yeah,
just like,
know?
A family van, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now since we're talking about Orville, now let's go ahead and touch on that. Mm-hmm. We covered the first three episodes of Orville with our special Discovering Trek episode that we had, where we talked about both Orville and Star Trek Discovery and our first impressions of these shows, because they were released with a back-to-back of each other. And we covered the first three episodes, which is Old Wounds, where the newly promoted Captain Ed is taken back when his ex-wife is assigned as his first officer. Then we had Command Performance in episode two, which Alara must take command of the Orville when Ed and Kelly end up imprisoned in a replica of their old home, mm-hmm. Which was kind of like the zoo episode. And what was the original episode, original series with Pike?
The Cage. It was the pilot episode.
The Cage.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then the one episode that really, really kind of surprised us all and really kind of showed what this episode is about and really drew us in was called About a Girl. Mm-hmm. Where Bortus and Clyden debate whether their newborn child should have a controversial surgery. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about how this was just classic good Trek drama writing. It had a controversial topic and it didn't end the way I expected it to end. And that was the reason why I loved this episode. I know you feel strongly about that episode and we touched on that, but I just thought maybe you might want to say a couple of words about it.
Well, we covered these on probably the impetus of this show. It was our Culture Clash special, A Mission of Discovery. And yes, that particular episode, episode 3 of the Orville, About a Girl, it's a pivotal episode. It's an episode that starts the course of that series. The other two, Old Wounds and Command Performance, they establish the universe, but this episode, episode 3, establishes the tone. It establishes why this show is important and why you should be watching it, because it does tackle themes in that very... I know we're going to compare it to Star Trek a lot because I think it's the point. I think that's, I think it's the point of that. And it tackles it very quickly. It starts off the right trajectory very early on in the series.
You know, and it's interesting too, because you could tell that the producers and Seth MacFarlane, they're really trying to get the best talent for these episodes. The first episode was directed by Jon Favreau. Mm-hmm. The second episode was directed by Robert Duncan McNeil from, of course, Tom Paris from Voyager. And that third episode was directed by Brandon Braga. But I thought maybe we would touch on the newest episode that came out September 28th. Mm-hmm. And it's called If the Stars Should Appear. The crew encounters a vessel adrift in space that's about to collide with a star. And it kind of reminded me of that one episode of Next Gen where they come across the Dyson Sphere.
Yes.
Where their ship comes across this huge, massive structure.
Relics.
But in this case, though, and the stars should appear, it's this gigantic ship that is drifting in space. And I think it was heading towards a star or something.
Yes.
So it was in danger of getting destroyed. Mm-hmm. And... Ed Mercer, along with several of his crew members, they go aboard this thing, and they end up finding that it's basically, what would you call it? I don't know what you call it, but they're basically living inside a ship. These people are living inside a ship, not realizing they're in a ship. What would you call that?
Well, originally, it was just a bio-ship.
It was a bio-ship.
And it was created so that there could be long distance travel within a self-contained ecosystem so that you would have sustainable air because there were trees, sustainable water, recycling system. I think the only thing that was really artificial there would have been day and night. And that's kind of like the thrust of where we're going to get at the story. But everything else was a fully sustainable, self-replicating, self-contained biological sphere.
Okay. So they get aboard the ship here, and they come across. I guess what it is, they split up first, right? Mm-hmm. And Ed Mercer's group comes across a farm with some people, and they're having to. I guess it's a family, and they're having to stun the father because the father comes out with a gun,
mm-hmm.
And they start telling the kid and the mother who they are.
Yeah.
And the kid starts to tell them that, I guess basically their lives are, they've been there all this time, but the people that rule this world don't believe that there is life outside of their current situation. Mm-hmm. Is that a good way to say
that's
it?
That's fair. Yeah, I think so.
And they're run by this guy and this group of people that are, in a way, they're kind of like tyrants, maybe religious fanatics as well.
Cultists. I think
cultists,
that's fair to say.
Yeah. And Alara and Kelly come across these enforcers, and Alara is shot and left for dead, and Kelly's character is captured and taken to the leader. And, of course, he's questioning her and basically pretty much is trying to torture her for information.
Yeah.
And she's fighting back verbally as well, which is was actually quite humorous. Mm-hmm. You're kind of getting the feeling that he does not want to believe that her story is true, where she is telling him that, look, you're actually on a ship,
mm-hmm.
and your ship is going to be destroyed. We're here to help you.
Right.
And he's kind of like not wanting to believe it. But there's a part of me in Robert Knepper's character. I don't remember his character's name, but the actor Robert Knepper, who I love, great character actor, been in a lot of TV series, doesn't want to believe it, but he kind of fears that there is some truth in that. But he likes the power that he has. And in the meantime, Ed Mercer and his crew, they are, I guess, heading back into town with the help of the kid, because they introduce him to, what is the guy's name that was from Space Above and Beyond? He was part of the group that do believe there is something larger
they're like,
out there.
Yeah, they're like reformers. It's this is your classic, typical Star Trek episode of faith versus technology.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And if you believe in other than this faith, it can be punishable by death.
Right.
And eventually what happens is Ed Mercer and his group, they find Alara, they help her, they go basically into town, which is there on the Universal lot, if I remember correctly.
Oh, gosh, yeah. There's
many, many a Star Trek has been filmed there. especially that building with the pillars. You could take the tram tour along there and stuff, but they always redress it for these television
I think
series.
That was done on purpose. I really do.
I believe. I would not be surprised. Yeah. I would not be surprised. But they infiltrate the main building, and they get to Robert Nepper's character, and they said, you know, basically, I love how Lara picks him up by the neck, kind of like a Darth Vader chokehold, Ed Mercer says, look, this is what's happening, whether you like it or not. And he pulls out his little communicator and he shows...
Well, he shows the Orville and then he shows the station. The character's name is Hamilak. Remember, he goes,
thank you.
Hamilak, nice thank name. You. No, it isn't. You know?
Yeah. Yes. And so he says, look, we're going to stun you anyway, and because we got to get out of here. But... then they're led to this forbidden area where it basically is a hidden door that takes them to basically the control area of this ship. It's kind of like maybe the bridge, I guess, so
sure,
to speak.
Sure.
And one of the coolest cameos where this is Seth MacFarlane pulling his muscle power here. We see an automated message by Mr. Liam Neeson himself. Mm-hmm. Would you say that he was one of the organizers or creators?
Well, he was the captain.
Administrators?
He was the original captain of the ship. He was captain.
Okay,
he was Captain Jehavis Dural. And Dural, he is the word. It's almost like the word of God. You know, anything that he said or anything that he passed down into this ecosystem was the word of Dural. So that was the religion that this entire civilization was based on.
Okay, yeah, that's right. And by the way, James Morrison was the gentleman I was trying to remember. He was one of the people that was on the side of wanting to believe there was something more.
Right.
Of course, in another Fox failed TV series that we love, Space Above and Beyond. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we get to, now I'm assuming do you remember seeing Liam Neeson's character mentioned? Is this his uncredited role?
I looked at the credits and he was not in the credits.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Well, we know that he co-starred with Seth MacFarlane in the Western comedy, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Right.
So I'm sure he said, hey, can you do this for me? And he says, ah, sure. So basically, he said that the ship had run into some type of ion storm and was damaged and was basically adrift in space.
Right.
Then they were able to find a way to basically open the top, the sunroof, as Ed Mercer called it.
Right. The whole point of this is that they wanted to show the people there that believed in a certain faith that they were on a biosphere ship. And this is a recurring theme in a lot of classic science fiction where faith has been so indoctrinated in a specific culture. Do you have the right to be able to upset that faith? And that's what Hamilak was saying. He was saying, I understand what you are. I know who you are, but you're going to upset all of this just because you think you have the right to do this? Because if there's one thing that I had an issue with this particular episode at the end, when Ed Mercer ordered them to open up the biosphere's dome and show them space because it allowed them to go through the cycle of sunlight to night. What do you think would actually happen to an entire civilization that was there for 1,000 years or 2,000 years, I believe, they were drifting? What do you think that would happen to a civilization when you all of a sudden introduced them to something they have never been exposed to? Do you think that would do them good? Or do you think that would do them harm without actually prepping them for what is supposed to happen? That's what Hamilak was doing. Now, yes.
Yeah, that could create panic. I could see the concern.
Yeah, and that's what he was saying. He's like, yes, he tortured Kelly Grayson's character. I understand that that was a bad thing. But the reason why he was doing that is because, like, if you introduce what you're trying to introduce too quickly, it's going to cause mass panic and chaos. It didn't.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the Star Trek clean wrap up. But I can see why and how that would happen, because it's all of a sudden if our society, right, was just plunged into eternal darkness, like there's no sun anymore. What do we do?
Right.
Right.
Right. So. Right. Right. Yeah. Good point. Definitely. One thing I want to mention was the one kid that becomes friend with the crew, I guess the away team, their version of the away team, mm-hmm. was Tomlin, played by Max Burkholder.
Good character.
Thought he was really good.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I loved Robert Nepper as well. Norm, so to wrap up this segment of Orville, after seeing that very strong third episode, what did you think of this one?
I think this is actually a very good episode, too. Now, it's not as emotionally charged as the third episode, because I think a lot of us got behind what was happening in that episode. But for this one, I do like how it is that's not the right word. I was going to say attack. How it's approaching the age old argument or debate of faith versus technology and who has the right. Again, it's another one of those who has the right episode. Does Ed Mercer have the right to upset two millennia's worth of a belief system because he feels like it's the right thing to do?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious how if the show was okay. I'm going to answer that question because if I'm trying to figure out the balance here, we have about maybe 60-70% drama and 30% comedy.
But that's on a sliding scale before, like, and the pilot, it was like most like 60-40, and now it's more like 75-25.
But if it was like 60% comedy and 40 or 30% drama, then I would say he would be doing this all the time without second thought. But the fact they're trying to find a good balance and making you care about these characters and the decisions and the consequences of their decisions, I think that, you know, I think Seth is doing a great job portraying Captain Ed Mercer. I mean, someone had mentioned to me today, we were talking about this, he felt that Seth's character was probably the weakest, or at least the weakest written so far or thus far. Hmm. And I could see his point because a lot of the other characters have had a chance to shine. But I think he's doing his job, and I think he's doing a pretty good job, especially portraying the captain type character mm-hmm. and having to make these decisions, you know. And so what I've really liked about the series so far is there hasn't really been a stinker episode.
No.
They've all been good, I think. You know, obviously a couple I like more than the rest, but there's only four so far, and I really, really like this episode. If the stars should appear, I thought it was really well done, and it really felt like Trek, you know, coming across a new civilization, you know, telling them what's really going on when they may have some type of religious or belief. We've seen that before, mm-hmm. whether it was filming on the back lot of Universal. You know?
Well, a couple of things that smacked about classic Trek to me, that there was an episode in the original series called For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. It's about an automated civilization on an asteroid planet. That's kind of like one thing. There was part Return of the Archons, where we get back to that set where, you know, basically you have a society that was built and forged on a computer program named Londru. You know, and the only other thing that I really wanted to add to this is I actually think so far, and I'm not saying that she's a weak actress, I just don't think her character has been able to shine yet. I don't think that Adrienne Palicki, for an actress of her quality, has been able to shine yet. I thought it was going to happen in this episode.
I think she's going to get her chance.
I thought it was going to be in this episode in that torture scene, and all she really was she was a vehicle for one-liners. You know, that
I have a feeling that the trailers for the next episode, which is called Priya, I think we're going to get a little more out of her in this one.
I hope so.
Just have a feeling.
I hope
for
so.
Her. Yeah. 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 And if I remember correctly, the next episode is the one that has also the co-star of the Western?
A Million Ways.
A Million Ways to Die in the West. Mm-hmm. Seth's co-star, remember who it is?
I do.
Charlize Theron.
That's a big name to bring on TV.
I know. And if I remember, I heard a rumor, I think Star Trek alum Jonathan Frakes is going to be directing.
He's directing this. Yeah, well. I mean, Brandon Braga, he's no stranger to science fiction, and obviously to Star Trek. I think that's why episode 3 clicked so well, is because a lot of it felt like Star Trek because he is from Star Trek.
Yes. Exactly.
And an executive producer.
Exactly. So. Well, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up our wrap up here of Orville. Mm-hmm. Really excited about this series, man. It's going really, really well.
I think so.
But let's get to Star Trek Discovery. Are you excited about this, Norm?
Oh, yeah.
And you know what, Norm? I'm going to have you helm this episode.
Well said. Well said.
This episode list. Okay, first of all, we talked about the first couple episodes in our Discovery mm-hmm. and Orville special that we did.
Yes.
The Vulcan Hello, which was the first episode, yes. and Battle of the Binary Stars, which is basically kind of a origin story of Michael Burnham, mm-hmm. what happened, what she did, the consequences that she did, the death of her captain. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was watching this newest episode, which we're about to talk about right now, which is Context is for Kings, mm-hmm. I said something. I said, I don't think Discovery has shown all of its cards yet. Mm-hmm. And I was right. go ahead. Context is for Kings. Norm.
So Context is for Kings is episode 3 of Discovery. And I think that tonally, this is the episode that really launches the mission, if you pardon the pun. Because the first two episodes, the Vulcan Hello and Battle at the Binary Stars, that was really a prologue. That was a really in-depth and very quickly, highly paced story of the details that you needed to know in order to further this storyline. Now we are in 15 episodes, so we've already used 2 episodes up. We have 13 episodes left, I believe. And this episode basically starts the story of how Michael Burnham is introduced to this Discovery. Michael Burnham is on her way to her next prison sentence and the next prison area that she's supposed to be condemned to. And then mishap happens on her space shuttle where she is in the midst of a bunch of different criminals. And then a species starts to eat away at the electricity of the space shuttle. And just mayhem ensues. And all of a sudden she's tractor beamed onto a ship. She has never seen this ship before. She doesn't know what the ship is all about. And it ends up being a Federation starship. And the greeting that she was given on the starship was far from friendly. Everybody knows who she is. And matter of fact, she was nicknamed the first mutineer of Starfleet. Now, that may or may not be credited as canon is true. But as she is and the rest of the criminals are waltzed through the Discovery, we see that it is a ship of very interesting design, as well as interesting designations, as we have seen the very first, what I would love to focus on, black badge operation of Starfleet, because there is a sectioned off secret area that's actually protected by a black badge officer, an officer with no designation, except for a black comm badge.
Yeah, I remember how excited we were about that. Right.
So Michael Burnham doesn't know why she's on the ship, doesn't know why she's been spared. She doesn't know why that she hasn't been forwarded along to a prison planet. Well, lo and behold, she actually runs into her fellow officer, who is now first officer of the Discovery, Lieutenant Saru, who is now first officer or number one Saru in a way. And there's a really touching scene where he calls her on the carpet for her crimes, but forgives her in a way. And she knows that she is a fish out of water. Nobody likes her. Nobody wants to deal with her. But for some unreason, she's on this ship. And then she's summoned by the captain. The captain believes Captain Gabriel Lorca, brilliantly acted by Jason Isaacs. And we see a tone now that there's something not quite right what's going on with this ship. There's something that's at play here, and we don't really know what. So, to wrap up this particular summary, Michael Burnham has been spared her sentence because she has this particular skill set that Gabriel Lorca needs in order for him to achieve the technology necessary for him to win the war against the Klingons. This technology is based on, check this out, people, and Kevin, I actually thought of you about this because this has very much to do with midichlorians. Okay, follow me on this. The Discovery is a special operations ship that has appropriated technology that allows space molecules or space spores that are the genetic makeup of space that connect with one another in terms of a very particular energy frequency to be used as propulsion in their warp drive, which means that they can use it to pop in and out of areas of Klingon space, hit, and leave immediately. but there are consequences to this technology. But Gabriel Lorca is not above risking whatever he needs to risk in order to win the war. Michael Burnham is a key player in this because she has the scientific knowledge from her training on Vulcan to be able to do what she needs to do to make these equations work. So what we've learned about in this episode is that there is a wing in Starfleet that is designated to do what it needs to do in order to win the war. We are at war. That is a given. That is that Gabriel Lorca says that many times.
It's not a science ship anymore.
It's not a science ship anymore. It's a ship that is designated to win the war against the Klingon Empire, and it smacks of something that we know of very well in Star Trek called Section 31.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah. It smells a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Wondering if those black badges may have something
to do. We don't know, but I think a lot of us are kind of leaning towards that route.
I want to talk about a few of the subplots here. Mm-hmm. First of all, we get a little bit of Vulcan Kung Fu.
The Tal Shiya.
And yes, when Michael Burnham first arrives on the ship and she's eating in the mess hall, and the other prisoners that she has arrived with don't like her so much and decide to take her on at the same time. When, Commander Landry, played by Rekha Sharma, mm-hmm. Holds back the security to see what happens if she can handle herself. And she does mm-hmm. until finally Commander Landry comes in and breaks it up. That was really cool. And then we see that Michael Burnham has a new roommate, which is my new favorite character.
A lot of people's new favorite character, yeah.
played by Mary Wiseman, Cadet Tilly, Sylvia Tilly, because she's got some, what would you say, some hang-ups, some...
She's about as fresh gets.
Yes, but she snores, she's got some
she's very social allergies. She's very socially awkward.
Yes, yeah. And that's what makes her very charming, yeah. Of course. And I did want to mention that if you are watching Star Trek through CBS All Access, make sure you check out the After Trek TV series, kind of like The Walking Dead, Talking Dead. After Trek's hosted by Matt Myra, and the recent episode, she was actually on there as a guest. Did you have a chance to watch that?
I haven't watched it yet, no, but I watched the first two, actually.
Yeah, she was really, really cool. And the thing I like about it, too, is where you would normally insert commercial breaks, the After Trek does some really cool behind-the-scenes stuff, and they do a great short on Doug Jones's transformation into Saru.
That's so good.
So I highly recommend that. Yeah. But so I really, really like that. And the other thing that I learned about watching Trek, thank God, because they tell you stuff that you may have missed. Did you notice all of the cool stuff that was inside Jason Isaacs, like sort of ready room / trophy room?
Yes, I did.
There was a Gorn skeleton.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Also, there was those Cardassian voles, mm-hmm. like either like a dead or stuffed version of one. And there's all kinds of other weird, cool things. That was awesome.
You know, here's the funny thing is that these are the details that the fans either love or hate, because there are certain fans that will say, if those exist in this time, why didn't we see them in 1966? It's because they didn't exist in 1966. They weren't part of these ideas that have grown and developed over the last 51 years. It doesn't mean that they're not there. Or I guess the tough thing is that every single time you introduce something new, a lot of the canon fans, or the canonistas, if you will, they'll say like, well, if it didn't exist back then, it shouldn't exist now.
I really love seeing the Cardassian ball. That was really cool.
There's an interesting theory behind that.
A Gorn skeleton.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And a triple.
That was cool. Now I want to talk about the other subplot where they go to the ship that is drifting in space because something's wrong.
USS Glenn. Like
yes. Mm-hmm. They come across a bunch of mutilated and dead crewmen and Klingons.
Yes.
And there is a creature aboard. Do you remember the name of the creature? Did they have a name for it?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. And a lot of people thought it was some type of mutated Targ, you know, a Klingon pet.
Right.
But one thing, one character that I'm sorry, remiss that I did not say, and I forgot, and I apologize to the listeners, is that Anthony Rapp's Lieutenant Stamets was amazing.
Yes.
amazing. Yeah. Because he came in and he was not a Starfleet officer that you were accustomed to know from Starfleet. He was brusque.
Yeah. He was not nice to Michael Burnham. And he also showed a little back talk towards his captain, too, that Jason Isaacs just was not having.
Well, in another subplot that you were talking about, he was a specific type of science officer, at a micro level with these spores. And his technology is being appropriated for war. So it seems to me that at one point in time, he and his friend and his research partner, Stahl, they were using this technology to try and explore space. Because remember when Ensign Connor, you know, when he was in Battle at the Binary Stars, he was talking to Burnham, and he says, "I thought we were supposed to be explorers. We're Starfleet. We're not soldiers." So I bet you at one point in time, Stamets felt this way. And he's like, you know, we're supposed to be explorers. We're supposed to be using our brains and our potential to explore the greater secrets of space and not to use it in as a weapon of war, to weaponize our technology. So I think that's where he and Lorca are going to butt heads. And they're so strong of actors, it's going to be neat to see their characters interact.
We have to talk about Captain Gabriel Lorca, though.
Yeah.
What is your first impression of him? And what do you think, what type of captain do you think he's going to be? Because we've not seen a captain like this before, man.
I
mean, he's got some secrets. He's got a temper. And apparently he likes trophies. So what's your impression? What do you think we're going to see from him?
I think that he's the captain they need. They don't want necessarily, but they need to make these difficult choices. Because more often than not, the idealized captain of Starfleet or the United Federation of Planets is supposed to be a paragon of nobility and honor. Yes, I understand that. And that's the way that Star Trek used to be. And it still is if you just want to cling to previous incarnations of Star Trek. And that's fine. And I think this is where the fans are actually having a little bit of trepidation with this series. Captain Gabriel Lorca represents what it needs to be what someone needs to be in order to win. Now, does that necessarily mean he's going to take the higher or lower moral high ground? That remains to be seen. But when you're dealing with a new captain and trying to understand the captain's motivations, especially when you're dealing with, say, someone like Archer, because this is closer to, say, well, not closer, but this is more akin to Archer than it is to Kirk. Lorca is charged to win a war against this Klingon Empire, a unified 24 houses that has never been done before. So when you're briefed by your higher ups and say, use what's at your disposal, he's going to use what's at his disposal. Because if you don't win the war against the Klingons, the Federation ends with this generation. And that's what Archer was charged with when he had to arm the Federation's first flagship, the Enterprise, with weapons. They were supposed to be explorers, but when you're being beaten on by unknown alien species, how are you supposed to explore if you don't defend yourself? That's the great juxtaposition of this particular storytelling of Star Trek. How are you going to be envoys of peace, but in a way where, you know, it's like you can't defend your olive branch because there are powers out there that are willing to make everything and throw everything at you in terms of weapons of war?
Discovery with this third episode has obviously kind of, like you said before, with the third episode of Orville, is kind of showing you what type of show it's going to be. And I think Discovery has taken a big chance here because all of the other Star Treks have mostly been about exploration and discovery. Deep Space Nine got into a lot more with the war aspect of it.
Right.
A lot of people liked it for that reason. I know I did too. Kind of got away from the exploration part. Well, this series is going, we're in war right now with the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's getting away from that 5-year mission, exploration and What is your take on that? Do you think it's something that Star Trek needs? Do you think it's bold? Is it risky? What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, we have to understand that by the time we get to Kirk, Spock, and McCoy et al., and the subsequent series after that, that's when the Federation is in a more established position in the quadrant, you know, in the Alpha Quadrant. So it, we have to see the story to this point. It's kind of like Star Wars, right? We know the history of the Clone Wars when Kenobi said, you know, I fought in the Clone Wars the same as your father, and the Jedi Knights were at a certain power level, but we want to see what happens when that happens. So when the Federation, as its full strength, was there, and they create a certain, I guess a certain understanding with the Klingons, but that doesn't really get fleshed out until Errand of Mercy in season one with the Organian Peace Treaty. Yes, we know that there was an incident where the Klingons and the Federation were really at each other's throats. That's this history. And I'm not exactly sure if it's technically going to be the history where we talk about the 4 Years' War, which was originally a tabletop game module. It was fan fictionalized, and then it was actually explored later on in a fan film project called Axanar, which is a star system where the 4 Years' War took place. But is that going to be this history? I don't know. Nobody knows. I mean, I'm sure the writers know because they're writing it. So in order for the Federation to be understood as the peace envoy it is moving forward, we have to know how it gets there. We didn't see it quite in Enterprise, and we didn't see it from the last episode of Enterprise, which are These Are the Voyages, which was on the last episode, which was on May 13th, 2005, 100 years before this happened. So what happened in that 100-year time span? That's kind of where the story is supposed to be.
All right. Well said. Yeah. Now, as we wrap up this part of Star Trek Discovery, we'll tease. The next episode is called The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty heavy. Not a heavy question. I got to ask you, because we've talked about this briefly. Star Trek Discovery ship and the Orville ship. Which one do you want?
You know, the funny thing is that I was leaning towards the Orville so hard. I think I still am, but there were some pretty significant beauty shots of the Discovery in episode 3 where I'm like, wow. Especially because I saw the very first reveal of the Discovery at San Diego Comic-Con. It was last year. And it didn't quite look polished. It looked like a very early or a design concept. But seeing it in some of the beauty shots in this episode, I'm like, wow, what a good looking ship. However, if you're going to make me choose between the two ships, I'm choosing the Orville.
I'm with you there for right now, because what I find fascinating is that it's a mid-level exploratory vehicle or ship. I'm curious to see what like the top one is, and I really hope that we see an episode where we get to see that and that crew and what it does and stuff.
Yeah, so it will be neat to see like more ships in the Union, like more diversity and different configurations and such. Unless they all look like that, I don't know.
Well, as we wrap up this first episode of Discoville, give me your give me some final thoughts on what you thought of the latest Orville episode, and what do you want to see next?
Well, I loved the latest Orville episode, and I think that Seth is on a really good trajectory, because there is an audience out there that loves the classic storytelling and look, and I want to see the Krill return, because it seems like the Krill is going to be the B-plot thread that ties the entire first half of this series together. It'll be really interesting come May Sweeps. No, not May Sweeps. I guess, would it be May Sweeps? Whether or not the Orville, or maybe the first half sweeps, you know, when series usually have their first half break, where it's going to go from there. Is it going to, like, end on a cliffhanger?
Well, we are going to have an answer to that question, because the episode after next week is called Krill.
Yeah.
And I have a brief episode description. Ed and Gordon are sent on an undercover mission to infiltrate a Krill ship and obtain a copy of their Bible. We'll see what that is. So, yeah.
Okay.
I want to see. I'm looking forward to it. I love the way the show's going. But I think we're going to get a little more. I think we're going to get some tension between Ed and his ex-wife. with the guest star, Charlize Theron. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of that dynamic in their relationship and see if their friendship is also tested.
So, I hope so.
I think he's going to get a little smitten with this character, and as alluded to in the trailers for the next episode, she's not what she seems to be.
It's going to be interesting to see Charlize on the small screen, because she can command a presence pretty darn quickly on any screen.
Yeah, she can. Yeah, she can. All right. And any final words and thoughts on the third episode of Star Trek Discovery? Context is for kings.
This was the episode that I think that a lot of people were waiting for in the Star Trek community, because I know there was a lot of chatter on social media that the first two episodes didn't really hit the mark. They felt that there was just a lot of contrivances being made and a lot of very transparent and predictable writing. And maybe that may be the case, maybe not. But it had to set up a lot, because I think that with the launch of the Discovery proper, the ship, the crew, the people that you're supposed to care about, when that happened, it gave the episode a lot more breathing room. It gave you the thrust of why we're here. Why do we care about these characters and what these characters are capable of, especially the captain. The captain really was the missing piece. And I really do think that they chose perfectly, because Jason Isaacs isn't the heroic type. And when I say that, he's not your William Shatner. He's not your Avery Brooks. He's not your Patrick Stewart. There's something else at play here. And he's not your typical Starfleet captain. He's certainly no Scott Bakula, you know, or...
I like the fact that he's a little shady.
Yeah, he's shady, but yeah. When you want a war to be won, you want a guy that's going to get his hands dirty.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and maybe some... like the Admiral of the Europa, he didn't seem like that guy. But there's going to be a shadiness that's there in Starfleet. And I think that's Section 31. Mark my words.
All right. Well, there you have it. It's been awesome talking about Discoville, man. I love the fact that we can talk about Orville and Star Trek. And I hope that we turn some people that maybe weren't kind of leaning towards one or the other towards their direction. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, you know, Star Trek is already like a hotbed of charged opinions and emotions out there. And it's coming from a lot of different angles. But at the same time, not every single person that's come to Discovery has a lot of that 51-year baggage or 30-year baggage. They're brand new fans to this genre. They're brand new fans to it. And it has to, in order for Star Trek to capture a brand new audience, it has to look like a competitive product against a lot of the modern science fiction out there. Yes, a lot of people may disagree with that. It should be Star Trek. Star Trek can't rest on its laurels. It has to push forward. It has to evolve. It has to be timely. That's what Star Trek has always been. So unless it's competitive, and it's going to be more of the same. But the funny thing is that more of the same is the Orville, but the Orville's doing it in a very different, successful way.
Yeah, no, agree. And I'm glad you brought up the possibility that this Star Trek is someone's first Star Trek, and they could be also enjoying Orville, not knowing anything about Next Generation and the other Star Trek that it's been inspired from. I think that's great. Yeah. Well, I just want to remind everyone here, Norm, that we have some other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network Master Feed. Of course, our other show that you and I co-host, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast for you Highlander fans out there. Please check that out. We just recorded our episode 55, and Norm and I, in a couple of weeks, are getting ready to head out to Los Angeles for the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention Gathering, celebrating 25 years of the TV series. Yes, we know there's some Highlander fans out there that forgot there is a TV series out there. But, of course, we cover all Highlander on that podcast. And, Norm, that has been an awesome ride, and we're going to be having some special guests on the show as well, and we're looking forward to meeting a lot of the fans here.
For sure, yeah.
Also, we have Culture Clash, our weekly fandom news show that our fellow Fandom Podcast Network co-founder Kyle Wagner and I host. And, of course, that is also where we had our Culture Clash special of both Star Trek Discovery and Orville, where we cover the first couple episodes there. So make sure you check that out. Couch Potato Theater, those movies that you just sit on the couch and watch. Coming on, and you watch it anyway, even though you know that copy of your DVD or Blu-ray sitting on the shelf.
I just did that last night.
What did you do?
Scarface.
Nice. I did it with Pulp Fiction. Right. I did it with Pulp Fiction. Right. So yeah, we cover those classics, and coming out, if it's not out already, is the 2008 movie Doomsday. We also are doing Blade Runner. I think Adam and I are going to be doing Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. We've been talking about that. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've covered G.I. Joe, the animated series. We did, I think we did, was it last year? We did like Last Starfighter.
Yeah, we did,
right?
Last Starfighter, yeah. Masters of the Universe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Transformers, the movie. Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes. So, yeah, so we got more coming up as well with that. And of course, we have Time Warp, 1987, the movies, 30 years ago, four-part series. We've done three of them so far. Make sure you check that out. There's some great movies that came out 30 years ago. A lot of anniversaries. The Princess Bride just had their anniversary, their 30th anniversary. We covered that, so make sure you check that out. And, of course, we have our Alfred Hitchcock, the Master of Suspense podcast called Good Evening with your hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris. And Kyle and I also co-host The End Zone, your weekly football fandom show. Now that it's weekly because we're right in the beginning, first quarter of the football season. And for you football fans out there, we're covering everything that we can, talking about our favorite teams and giving you the best mediocre fantasy football advice. Well, Norman, thank you. This has been fun, man. I'm looking forward to doing more. Looking forward to these shows. Thank you for doing this first episode of Discoville. I feel like we need a disco ball and some type of cool theme.
Well, we're working on it. Remember, this is our first show, so we have time to evolve and expand and polish our format, but a disco ball could work.
There we go. All right. Anyway, I'm Kevin, and on behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening, and join us next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Discoville. Norm, thanks a lot, man. Let's talk some more next week. All righty. All right. See you next time. Goodbye, everyone.